Please take your seats. The show is about to begin.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to Truth, Lies, Shenanigans. Some ghosts took over our show for a second, but here we are. My name is Neil Nix, and you can call me the
Genie of the Lamp.
All right. For today's show, it's our annual Halloween party, but we've got something really special this year. We're going to grab some cocoa and sit around the bonfire telling spooky stories with the incredible fantasy and adventure author Erica Lewis, who has decided to join us with a scary story of her own. And we'll close the show with Shenanigans the Game Show and some Halloween trivia. Don't forget, you can stick around for our post-show shenanigans in the after show, which streams live exclusively in our TLSfans.com Facebook group. But before we get into our show, let me introduce you to our fantastic host for the next frightful hour, the professor, journalist, editor, sports intern, mentor, and Cruella de Vil, Miss Lizzie Enders.
Happy Halloween, everyone. Happy Halloween. Cheers to the freaking Halloweekend. I hope you all had a fabulous week. Lots of frights, lots of ghouls and goblins. Hopefully you got some tricks in with your treats. It's going to be a great show for you guys today. Great show.
And our gamer, tech guru, bona fide rock star with the rock band Fall in the Machine, and Iron Maiden today, coming to you from Sudbury, B-Rock.
What's up, everyone? Happy Sunday, fun day. Happy Halloween. I hope you've had a really great week. I know that Joe and I got an unexpected surprise yesterday. Our neighbors threw a Halloween party for some piglets. So just across from our great big picture window, there were kids aged 2 to 8 years old participating in all kinds of activities, a scavenger hunt.
Aww.
And
wow,
we were watching some alien movies and then just hear the kids laughing. So it's like, all right, that sounds like fun. What's going on over there?
Awesome.
And our model, actress, college student, and witch for the day out of Atlanta, Georgia, Gianni Storm.
Okay, you guys. Okay, I'm a witch, but I'm a queen skeleton witch. Hold on, let me do the whole ensemble.
Oh, look at that queen skeleton witch.
Happy Halloween, everybody. I love Halloween. It's one of my favorite holidays, and I'm excited. I threw together this look. I was actually going to be a headless woman, and then I tried it, and I tried it, and I tried it, and it was just.
I was going to say, that's like, tough for a show.
Yeah, it looked a mess. So here I am.
All right. So tell us all about your costumes. Lizzie, how'd you come up with this?
So first of all, let's say give a round of applause and a happy birthday.
Your man.
Michael Myers. What's up? But in today's
movie was crazy.
It was horrible. It was horrible. Halloween Kills, horrible. They should have stopped after H2O. They should have stopped after H2O. But in addition to being, you know, Michael Myers' birthday, it's also my dad's birthday. So happy birthday, posthumously, to Robert Earl Newman. If he was still with us, he would be 101 years old today. And so in honor of him, I am Cruella de Vil, character villainess from a 101 Dalmatian.
Oh, nice. Robbie Rock, tell us about your costume. What's up?
Well, this was just one of those finds. It was a plain skeleton mask with a hinged jaw that I found at one of the stores, and I decided to personalize it a little bit today with some stylish teeth, some black highlights, just to make them pop. Of course, the reddened eyes, and my lovely skull fracture. Well, I guess it's more of an incision.
But, skull fracture.
Okay, it's been cinched up.
Something. I see. Okay, now I see. All right.
Yeah, it's a screw plate just to keep everything together.
Oh,
it's
nice.
It's like a bullet hole.
It does.
It's a bullet hole. I got shot up out there in the streets.
But I'm back, baby.
I like the way the mouth moves. That's pretty awesome.
I know, that's my favorite part. And the red. I really like that you added the red. It looks like creepier, like you fleshly, you were freshly dead.
It took a $10 I took a $10 mask and turned it into something awesome.
Yeah, nice.
Gianni, what about
yours? That's what Halloween's about. I actually took the concept from a famous YouTuber. Her name's Aaliyah J, and she had a tutorial on how to do the makeup look. I had this hat already from like a thrift store, and I have this dress that looks like witchy. And I was like, hey,
I was just going to comment on Gianni's makeup versus my makeup. So I can tell that you have used like some type of white coloring to give yourself that witch's, dead witch's effect. So I have a lot of white makeup on my face too, right? You can't tell.
Yeah.
That's just how pale I am out here in these streets, guys. I have so much white powder on my face.
You need some vitamin D. You got the sun.
You cannot tell. It's horrible.
There's some comments online. So we got Latoya says, I love how the mouth on Rob's mask moves as he talks. The costumes are nice from Karen Thompson. Latoya also says, love the costumes, guys. The red does make it pop a little more. Nice flourish, Rob B. Oh, and then Olivia says, Neo Nix, I got three wishes. I'm going to holler at you after the party. In the after party. So my costume, of course, I'm the genie from Aladdin. Aladdin's like my absolute favorite.
I didn't even
movie.
Notice your background until just now. That's hilarious.
Right? Absolutely.
Talk about that ponytail, though, y'all. That ponytail.
This ponytail, I don't know what you're talking about. We're ponytail. Yeah, so it's my absolute favorite movie, Aladdin. So, and then my wife helped me today. So she helped me with the hair and the makeup and all that. So it was awesome. Turned out really, really
nice. Do you guys have plans afterwards? Are you going?
We're probably going to trick-or-treaters at my door.
We're probably going to take the trick-or-treaters at the door, too.
Same.
So my man and I are going to kick back and watch some movies. We got a date. Oh, not date tonight. So we're going to kick back and watch some Halloween movies.
Let's hope you make it through the night.
I mean, is anybody, so Gianni, you going trick-or-treating with your fam, with your friends?
No trick-or-treating. I don't have friends, but I will be passing out. I'm kidding.
That's because you a witch.
We're loners by nature. But no, I'll pass out candy. There's a ton of little Hispanic kids in my neighborhood. So
Olivia says, Neo Nix had a pony back in the day. Yeah, I did.
You did?
I wasn't bald with a ponytail, though. Mike Winter says, I'm fitting to scare some neighborhood children. Latoya says, I figured she might have helped with the ponytails. It is all the way on point.
It is laid.
Keep my comments to myself.
Is anybody doing a party or anything?
Yeah, I got to work tomorrow.
We did yesterday, my wife and I, we did a paint and sip. And we did like these sugar skulls. So,
oh, nice.
Let's see if I can pull them out. So, yeah.
That's nice. So cool.
Looks like my green
thing
is pulling out the green. But this is my wife. She did it in
pink. That's what I
like. She did it in her posh pink. And then I did this one.
Very nice.
You should have given that one a ponytail.
I should. If I had thought about it, I probably would have. So, anyway, having fun. All right. Before we get into our spooky stories, I want to tell you about Infinite Drip, who's sponsoring this. Sweatpants, sweatshirts, basics galore. Visit Infinite Drip brand clothes to get the fall season drip out. Check out InfiniteDripLLC.com. All right, now it's time to grab some hot cocoa and s'mores and gather around the bonfire. Time for spooky stories with Erica Lewis.
Welcome.
Hey, Erica.
Very excited.
We're happy to have you. Awesome. All right, now, Erica, you live in LA, but you grew up in the DC area, Alexandria, Virginia. Lizzie and I live in the DC area.
Nice.
Hopping a skip.
I was just there.
Oh, were you? So what was it like? I mean, do you miss it?
Yeah, I miss a lot of things about it. I mean, I don't miss the weather, but, you know, it's nice to have We don't get a lot of snow ever, unless it's in the mountains.
We don't either in D.C. anymore. D.C., it doesn't snow in D.C. anymore. It doesn't snow in D.C.
Well, we haven't seen snow.
My mom is... Yeah, it's funny. I miss a lot of things about it. My friends in high school. Funny, because we all get back together every time I'm in town. And it's like the same old, you know. And I come back all the time to visit my Alexandria High School is where I went to school, which used to be the former T.C. Williams, which is now the Alexandria High School.
Mm-hmm.
Go try it. So I go back there on whenever I'm writing something that comes out so I can hang out with the kids. And,
cool.
So it's fun.
So you say you're happier in L.A.?
I like living in L.A. I mean, I've been here for 20 years. Which is the longest
I've
lived. I'm used to it now. But I grew up there, and then I went to college in Nashville, Tennessee at Vanderbilt. And then, I lived in Atlanta for 4 years. I was working at CNN back then. And then I lived in London for a year. And so I've kind of lived everywhere.
Alexandria's home.
And reading your bio, it says your passion is storytelling set in magical places. Sort of like Agrabah.
Yeah.
And it says that when you're not writing, you're either traveling or scribbling on notes in a blank book while wandering through abandoned buildings and all kinds of museums and graveyards. So is that how you get your inspiration?
Well, yeah. You know, it's kind of funny because when I lived in London, I studied a lot of stuff in Ireland, a lot of Celtic history, a lot of mythology, and we go back now as a family frequently every summer if we can, you know, the pandemic we weren't able to, but a lot of my inspirations, in fact, I have a book coming out in March that's my new middle grade series, which I'm really so excited about. It's like after my heart. I can hold up the advanced reader copy. Here's the cover.
What's that, Kelsey?
Kelsey Murphy in the... you want to read it?
Kelsey Murphy in the Academy for the Unbreakable Arts.
Exactly.
Nice.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It was actually by on the Isle of Skye, which is a part of Scotland right now, back in, you know, early Irish history days, sort of all they melded together back even pre-Celts. There was a goddess named Skyhawk. She was a warrior goddess that taught all of the biggest heroes in Irish mythology how to fight. And so I actually went to the ruins of what they call Dunskye Castle, which, you know, she's called the Shadowy One, and she inspired the school that is the story. So, yeah.
Shadowy One.
You've done comics and novels. So you've done like Game of Shadows, Firebrand and the Incursion, Guardian, the 49th Key. And you have your current book is Call of the Dragons. It's your debut young adult novel just released.
Ooh. Tell us about that.
This came out October 1st. And it's a story about the first, it's about the very first dragon. So where King Arthur's stories and legends were the end of magic in Wales, this is mine and R.A. Salvatore, who crossed the story with me. It's our interpretation of the birth of magic in Wales. So it's the beginnings of Merlin, the beginning long before King Arthur and Merlin existed, and sort of the dinosaur evolutionary version of where the dinosaur, dragons kind of evolved from. And so this just came out. It is a story that we did in partnership with a company called Temple Hill Productions that did all kinds of movies and adaptations, The Hate to Give, Twilight, Maze Runner, so many. So I was actually back east with this book, did an event together, which was really fun because it's just now opening up, so it's kind of nice to get out, you know. I had to get my booster, and then I was going to schools, but it was great. I was so fun, and I don't care if I have to mask up. I'm just happy back in front of the readers, you know, to have a little bit of,
yeah,
because writers really three, I mean me and it.
So. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right, so it's officially story time. So I know you brought a scary story for us, so we're all excited.
Okay.
So Erica, I'm going to turn it over to you. Tell us your scary story.
Okay. So it's really funny that you're talking about Alexandria because my scary stories obviously all started there. I do have a weird relationship with ghosts. I tell you that they tend to find me sometimes. Uh-huh. And I say that and I inherited because this happens to my son sometimes, especially when he was little. But it all started on my riding my dirt bike through Fort Ward, which of course is in Alexandria, through the graveyards there, through you had to cut through Episcopal to get there from where I lived. And all of a sudden I would feel like weird things were kind of following me home. It would get cold. And then at about the age of 8, my mother decided that she was tired of wrapping our Christmas presents. And she decided that I in particular should be, because my fingers were, for some reason, I was a better wrapper. She would stick them all in this tiny little closet, which should say enough about the story. She would stick them in a closet. She would be like, oh, it's okay. Just close your eyes when you're wrapping yours, which of course at 8 years old, of course, then you know everything you're getting. But setting that aside. So yeah, parenting 101. This is what it comes from being a Gen X. So all the presents would be there, but it would always be at night, and she didn't want either anyone else seeing, you know, the wrapping. And so she'd close the door and I'd have my light that would, you know, tiny little flashlights in there. And there would just be presents everywhere. And it started the first year with just like knocking, you know, like hearing these weird sounds. And of course, freaked out, me, I'd run out and she'd be like, no, it's fine, it's nothing. Okay, the next year the lights would start flickering and this would go on and on and on and things would move. And I never really put much stock in it because, you know, I was like, okay, I could sense when ghosts were around because it would get really cold or I would feel fingers sort of creeping over my back and it would help. But after a while, you're like, okay. But then, and I swear to God, I know I wasn't asleep. One year, you know, Fort Ward was, I think, the fifth largest Union Civil War facility. And I know, did you guys see that movie Poltergeist?
Yes.
Right?
Of course.
Oh, my God.
One of my favorites.
Yes.
Of course.
Terrifying.
I mean, yeah. Well, all of the houses that were built in our neighborhood were new. And they were built on top of all of this land that had once been fought over with the Civil War. And so something really weird is going on. Yeah. And so literally one night, the last night, I will never wrap these presents again. The lights all went out. And you could just see a little bit of glow coming through the door. And all of a sudden, this huge wave of freezing comes over me. And when I flicked the lights back on, I saw all of these like Civil War men, soldiers from like young, we're talking, you know, from 10, maybe up to 16, not old. I think I was like 10 years old myself and they were wounded. Like they were like coming through in almost like a line of them. And I ran out and that was the last time I ever.
Oh my God.
In that closet again. I was like, no, I'm not going back in there. But yeah, so that was one. Yeah, that was one of the worst ones. But I remember when my son was born, he was, I guess at this point, he would have been about 2 years old. And when I moved in the house that we live in now, the woman who had been living here died the day we went to settlement. And her daughter had sold the house. So what was weird is literally right after that, the lights started going on and off. My dog would be barking at nothing, you know, like she'd go over to the corner of the room and just start barking. And it was like, okay, something weird is going on here. And so I went to visit some of my friends who are much more well-versed in what to do with ghosts. And she's like, you know, light some sage, have a conversation with her, tell her you're taking care of the house and it's okay to move on. So I'd have these conversations and things would die down. And then all of a sudden, after I started to have kids, things started to pick back up again. And my son was about 3 years old, and I'll never forget this. I hear him talking out loud to his room. It's 2 a.m. I get out of bed. I come down. I open the door, and Jack is sitting up. He's having a conversation with this person. And I said, Jack, you need to go to bed. Who are you talking to? And he's like, well, I'm talking to this nice lady, but she won't leave me alone. And I was like,
oh, ah. Oh my God. And,
wow, that's scary.
They always say like babies, no, like young babies and animals can see. So that's funny that you mentioned both dog and your son. God.
Yeah, and it's really scarier when the dog does it because, you know, then it's like it's more often. With my son, it was only a few times that it happened, but I've had really weird experiences. I remember the last story I'll tell, my last ghost story is my grandmother and I were very close. And but my grandfather died when I was like 7. So she didn't talk about him very much. And by the time she was passing, I was in my late 20s. And I woke up, she was really ill. I woke up and I was in that place between kind of sleep and awake, you know, where you're not quite awake, but you're not quite asleep. And I heard her and she used to call me Lovey. And she would say, Lovey, I have to go now. And I was like, where are you going? And she was like, well, I have to go. Your grandfather's waiting for me. And so I felt like, okay, am I dreaming this? And I said, you know, well, where is he? Is Grandpa here? She's like, yes, he's the one standing over there, the one with the really nice legs. And I thought, okay, that's a really strange thing for my grandmother to say to me in a dream, one with the really nice legs. Okay. So when I got to the office next morning, was like, I don't know, 6 a.m., 7 a.m. I got up because I got in there really early because I couldn't sleep.
Yeah.
My mother called. She's like, I have really bad news. Your grandmother passed away this morning. And I was like, that's really, really weird. Because she came to say goodbye. And I said, Mom, she said the strangest thing. She said that Grandpa was there. And she said something about him having really nice legs. And she's like, oh, she used to always say that about my father. And I was like, really weird. But okay. So,
you had never heard him say that before?
Never heard her say that before because he passed away long before I, you know, even have hardly any memories of him. I was like 7 when he died. Wow. He died young. So it was really strange. But there you go. I guess, but you know.
So suffice it to say you believe in ghosts, I'm assuming.
I do. And what's really funny is like with her in particular, I'll smell her perfume sometimes. I don't know if that happens to any of you guys. Like, suddenly will smell a perfume that isn't like I'll be in my office and I'll smell and I feel like she's there, you know, saying hi or something. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I've never seen a ghost personally, but I know in my childhood, my mother used to tell me that I would see things and talk to people and I'd be like, you know, talk to like other people. So I don't know. Maybe I did. I don't recall it though. Anyone else? You
want
to deal with that?
Not myself personally, but my son, when he was younger, about 4 or 5 years old, he had an imaginary friend named Pierre. And there was, and we lived in a housing co-op at that point. And there was a little boy named Peter that had been involved in an accident. He was out riding his bike and had been run down, and he lived in this community. So then Zach would start acting out and it's like, what are you doing? Well, you know, Garrett told me to do it. Like, and after a while, it's like, okay, kid, this is just creepy. Like, this stop, please.
Yeah, that's weird. Oh my God.
Yeah, wow. To the point, we used to see weird things. We definitely experienced some weird things in that unit. Mind you, I was taking over the counter sleeping pills at the time. So I was definitely in that fugue state. We had a friend Kevin do a smudging, burn the sage, and native traditions to cleanse the house because I was starting to get a little
out. Yeah, there's a story that
go ahead, Johnny.
Oh, I was just gonna say really quick in my hometown of Providence, Rhode Island, there was this castle that was in a city called Cranston in Rhode Island. And it was always like talks of this like ghost and soldiers, like haunted soldiers. And actually, if you guys know the movie Hocus Pocus, Hocus Pocus 2 is being filmed in that same haunted castle that I knew when I was growing up. So yeah, it was a lot of like sights, and it was, I have so many stories.
What are you saying, Liz?
I was just saying, I, you know, with all of this evil out here, and, you know, I watch a lot of scary movies. I love thrillers. That's my favorite genre of books and of movies. I always watch, like, my go-to channel is Investigative Discovery. I watch all of the killer shows. And so with that in mind, I'm always burning sage to keep the evil out. I'm always burning sage.
You attract it. Yeah. Yeah. Smart.
Yeah. And I sleep with, a butcher knife underneath my pillow. But
you say that
the killer gets into my room, I have sage burning. I have sage.
All right, Lizzie, Rob, who wants to go next? Oh, go ahead. Go. Were you going to say something, Erica?
I say go for the butcher knife before the sage if somebody comes into your room.
I'm with Erica on that one.
Absolutely. Like, the sage is for, you know, daytime sense, if you will. You know, hopefully it'll encourage, you know, the universe to keep the evil out. But if the evil comes in, I got something for them.
I've got
something for them.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. So I see
call me Cruella DeVille for nothing.
So Karen Thompson says, interesting stories, yet somehow very believable. George Fournier points out he loves the costumes. And Robin Johnson said, working overnight, and one night my tech and I were talking. At the same time, we both stopped talking and looked at each other. We both felt like a big dog brushed against our legs.
Ooh.
He's a veterinarian. He was on last week's show. That's crazy. All right, who wants to go next? Nice. Lizzie, Robbie?
What you got, Rob?
Go. All right. I will go.
Head, so he might be a little delayed. But go ahead, Rob.
He might be a little delayed.
And someone took the brain out, so that's going to be slow, eh? So gather around, kiddies, and I want to tell you about Canadian urban legend, the Tunnel Monster of Cabbage Town. So in early 19th century Toronto, there were many rivers, streams, and creeks branching across the land like sinews, expanding over the landscape. Vast forest trees towered over the growing city rather than the skyscrapers that loom over Toronto as we know it today. And down in the riverbeds of these wilds lived a race of ancient spirits known as the Mimigwesi. Now, Mimigwesi are small riverbank dwelling water spirits. They're generally benign creatures, but sometimes blow canoes astray or they steal things when they're not shown the proper respect. In some Anishinaabe traditions, Mimigwesi can only be seen by children and medicine people, while in others, they can appear to anyone and may help humans to give them tobacco or humans who give them tobacco and other gifts. Most often, Mimigwesi are described as being child-sized with hairy, with large heads, and a strange voice that sounds like the whine of a dragonfly. The waterways of the growing city of Toronto were theirs. You can pull up the map, Neil. So you can see the existing waterways that were there previously, and that's where the Mimigwesi lived. Now, these waterways were an issue for city planners and builders. The solution that was decided upon was that as the city expanded, the rivers and streams were built over and became a network of underground waterways buried beneath the city and merging with the sewer system. As early city builders found, it's actually quite difficult to completely erase a river, and many of the waterways that once penetrated downtown Toronto still exist, but they've been rerouted into underground culverts or underground waterways, secrets hidden away from the public view. The tunnel, please, Neo. Now, remember, the Anishinaabe tribes spoke of man-like hairy creatures that thrived in these rivers before they were hidden away. Flash forward to the 20th century, a time when most Torontonians have forgotten about the existence of these vast tunnel networks. That is to say, until one summer's day in 1978, in an area of the city known as Cabbage Town. Cabbage Town is located in central Toronto. A man named Ernest stumbled upon a secret entrance to the tunnels while searching for a lost kitten.
Ernest Cooper.
He was certain that he had heard distress mewling down the alley beside his Parliament Street apartment the night before. So he decided to army crawl into the culvert about 10 feet, flashlight in hand. The tunnel gradually widened its black depths like an abyss. Something skittered ahead, and he steadied the flashlight, hoping to see his kitten. was no cat caught in the beam. Picture, please, Neil. So a pair of slanted red eyes bulged at him above the gaping large-toothed mouth of a hairy gray bipedal creature about 3 feet long. Go away! Go away! It screeched. Then it ran off into a side tunnel. Terrified, Ernest shimmied back out of the tunnel and waited a full year before admitting to the Toronto Sun newspaper what he'd seen. However, when they went in search of the tunnel's entrance, they found it in that it had collapsed upon itself, and no one has ever admitted to such a sighting again. So I ask you, my friends, did the Mamagwesi deliberately destroy the tunnel entrance to protect themselves? Do you believe that the tunnel monster of Cabbage Town is a mythical Mamagwesi? Something else altogether.
Ooh, that was a good one.
I have a question.
The Mamagwesi.
So, are Cabbage Patch Kids from Cabbage Town?
I did come across that.
I thought they were from Georgia. Weren't they?
I think they are from Georgia. I think you're right, actually, from Georgia.
They are.
But is it, I mean, you know, Xavier Roberts was their daddy, if you will, but was he from
Xavier Roberts birthed a lot of babies.
Yeah.
So that was a real news article?
This is an urban legend that I discovered because I don't really have so many scary stories. So I thought, okay, well, let's dig into urban legends. I was finding so many American ones, and I was like, well, wait a minute. Canada has a rich cultural history. There's got to be a story. And I discovered this one about Toronto, and I had never heard it before. So
yeah.
It's kind of neat. And I learned a little bit about that Anishinaabe mythology.
Very cool.
All right. Well,
thank you for sharing.
Thanks, Robbie.
I think the actual figure kind of looks like a cat, Godzilla versus Bigfoot.
It looks like a chimp.
Like it's
yeah.
It's like morphed into all of these things, but he needs some work on his bottom teeth, his bottom row.
Yeah, badly.
He said he needs some work.
He's got some golem shit happening with his teeth. Yeah.
All right. Izzy, tell us your story.
All right, so this is a true story. Believe it or not, this is Newman's Cruella's Believe It or Not. So let's go back to 1998. And I think I've shared with a lot of you that growing up, my mom and I had a very difficult relationship, right? So 1998, there was an incident in our house and our family that required some type of counseling and intervention. And in this particular instance, the intervention was our school counselor, Mr. Battle. So we had meetings upon meetings. There was a lot of yelling, screaming, crying, accusations thrown back and forth or whatever. So on this particular day, it was a Friday night, a Friday during the day. I had a meeting with my dad at my school, Fort Lincoln Middle School, which is no longer in existence. Mr. Battle sat down with us. He talked to us and wanted to figure out how we should proceed. And obviously, I'm saying the incident was between my mother and myself. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so we get home and, you know, my mom was very defensive. So that, included more back and forth, more arguing, more accusations. Everyone went to bed angry. All right. And so all of my siblings, with the exception of my youngest older brother, were out of the house. So I was at home that weekend, just my parents and myself. I had my own room. I had a television in my room and I had my own phone line. Okay. Yeah, I was kind of spoiled. And so go to bed.
Yeah, for the 90s, I'm pretty spoiled.
I'm pissed off. Go to bed. I'm pissed off. My dad is pissed off and bewildered because he's just like, what the hell is going on? My mom is ridiculously pissed off. So we all go to bed, sleeping or whatever. I sleep with the TV on, but for some reason, I slept this night with the TV off. So my room was pitch black with the exception of the light looming in from the moon outside and the street. Oh, wow. I had two big windows in my room. So at that time, my bed was coming out this way from one of the windows. So the window was behind me.
I mean, towards you?
You're laying in the bed. No, but when laying in bed, the bed was against one of the windows.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
And so the window's behind and you could see the light coming in from behind me. Right.
Okay.
That, there are shadows. There are shadows all over the place, especially if it's dark. And so I'm sleeping. I'm a very light sleeper. All of a sudden, about, I would say, 1 o'clock in the morning, I hear this boom. So I sit up immediately. What the fuck is that? You know, I'm looking around, and then I look up and I see a shadow behind me, which looks like the figure of a person, right? And so I'm like, oh my God. So I'm saying to myself, what is this? What is this? And so I say, who's there? No response. But then I kind of hear this hissing sound. So I'm freaking out. Now, at that time, I wasn't sleeping yet with the butcher knife underneath my bed. But there were bookshelves attached to my bed. So there were, I think there was this big, I can't remember what type of figurine it was, but there was a figurine on the bookshelf that was very heavy. So I grabbed the figurine and say again, who's there? Person or whatever it was did not respond. Could have been a ghost. Did not respond. But as I kind of peek around the corner, it had a small frame and it kind of had the silhouette of my mother. So I'm like, okay, what the fuck is going on? Why is she in my room trying to scare me? And again, we had a very, very tempestuous relationship, but never had she tried to scare me in my room in the middle of the night. Right. Mm. So I look and I'm like, okay, I see you. I see you. Neo, can we get my visual?
Absolutely.
And if, for you all who aren't familiar with this, this is Margaret White, Carrie's mama, Carrie's crazy ass mama from the thriller Carrie. So as I turn around the corner,
oh yeah, Carrie,
the corner again, and I'm like, who's there? The shadow, the silhouette, raises its hand with a knife. I could see the knife. I could see the shimmer of the knife as it bounced off the light in the room. So I'm like, oh my God, she's going to kill me. She's trying to kill me. So here it is. Here we go.
Oh my God.
And so I'm paralyzed because you think all the time when you see things like that, or even when I talk about now, you know, if the killer comes into my room, I'm going to grab the butcher knife. This is what I'm going to do. Maybe not, because sometimes your body paralyzes. I could not move.
That's true.
Yeah, I've heard night terrors.
There's
like
a foot. There's a phone in my room, phone right next to my bed. I couldn't even get up to pick up the phone to call anyone. I couldn't scream out to my parents, to my dad. Yes, he and my mom, you know, we lived together. You know, they were sleeping in the same bed around the corner. I couldn't even scream. I was that terrified. So I must have sat in my position with my figurine in my hand like this for at least, I'm going to say, 90 minutes.
Wow.
Peeking around, trying to see, like, is she going to kill me? Well, if she's going to pounce, come on, let's do this. Let's do this. I think I'm ready. Let's do this. And so finally, once again, I get enough courage. I'm like, who's there? Hissing sound again. So then we stay in our positions for, I would say, another 45 minutes. Kind of maybe peed myself a little bit.
Peed yourself.
Maybe a little bit because I was scared. But I'm thinking, okay, I wasn't even 14 yet. I was still 13. My mom is about to kill me. We've been fighting all day, all week, and this is going to be the culmination of all of that. And so just as I am about to, I get up enough courage in my body. I'm just like, okay, if she's not going to go, I'm going to come at her first. Just as I am about to pounce, the phone rings. The phone in my room rings. And so I'm like, oh, my God, who's calling me? So I pick up the phone still with, you know, the figurine in my hand. I pick up the phone. I'm like, hello, hello. Is it the police? No, it was my counselor, Mr. Battle. So I look at the clock. It's like maybe 6:30 in the morning now. Mr. Battle's calling. He was like, you know, I just wanted to call to make sure. I know it's early. I apologize, but you told me that you have your own phone line. So I'm not waking up anyone else in the house. I want to see if you're okay. I'm like, no, I'm not okay. She's in here. She's trying to kill me. He's like, who's in there trying to kill you? I'm like, my mother. She's behind the bed. She's trying to kill me. He goes, oh my God, put her on the phone. He goes, put her on the phone. So I kind of get up. I go and turn on the light to put her on the phone with Mr. Battle. There's no one there. No one in my room. No knife in my room. Nothing. It was a combination of my anxiety, fear, and somewhat depression throughout the entire week, throughout this entire process, that caused this psychosis in the moment that led me to believe that my mom was behind me with a knife trying to kill me. And so he was like, he's like, is she there? What's going on? I'm like, okay, I'm going to go get her. So I run to my parents' room, burst into the room. I'm like, mommy, you know, Mr. Battle wants to talk to you. She's laying in bed, could not have been more shocked than anyone. Like, what is going on with this child? She gets on the phone, and Mr. Battle, I don't know what they discussed. I don't even know if he told her what I had experienced or what my accusations were. But she got up, you know, because she had to go to bed, go to, actually, it was a Friday, so she didn't have to go to work. But she got up, went downstairs, made some breakfast, and we went on throughout our day like nothing happened. I never mentioned it to my dad. I never mentioned it to my mom. I think I called my best friend, Keisha Moore, the next day and probably mentioned it to her. I can't remember if I ever told my sister, Jackie, but it was one of those things where I think for the next 2 or 3 months, I slept with the light on. I already normally slept with the television on. But from this moment forward, I never slept in a dark room again. But for the next couple of months, I slept with the light on.
So you think it was psychosis and not a ghost?
Yeah, I think, no, I don't think it was a ghost. I think it was my mind playing. In the words of the Ghetto Boys, this year Halloween fell on a weekend. It was my mind playing tricks on me.
So I'm gonna just ask you, what if you're wrong?
And I think she would have killed me. I think the ghost would have killed me.
Really?
So that's my story. What if
it was it sounds like an Erica ghost story. It sounds like some real life stuff.
Yeah, that's creepy. That was very scary. Wow,
but I never mentioned it to my mom. I never mentioned it to my parents because I'm like, you know, there's already a lot of stress in this house right now. I'm not adding that. They probably would have committed me at that point.
Right? I've already got a counselor. I don't need a psychiatrist.
Yeah.
Latoya Blakely on says, even if it was just your mind, that's still scary as hell.
Yeah. Yeah, it freaked me out. And thankfully, it was on a weekend, so I didn't have to go to school the next, because I was in no position to go anywhere the next day. None. I was just walking around the house like a zombie. Like, and then looking at her, you know, every time she passed me by in the house, I'm, you know, looking at her like, was that really you? Were you really you? You know?
The human brain is a scary thing. Wow. Nothing scarier than when looking against you. That's the way it like.
True.
All right.
So that's my story.
That's a crazy story.
That's a scary one.
That is a scary one. That was a good one, Liz.
Good job.
you got me.
This guy again.
Got us all messed up a little bit. All right. So
I still love Halloween, though.
All right. So Chiani wanted to go last. So I'm going to go ahead and tell my story next. And I don't have a scary personal story. I couldn't think. I mean, I have a bunch of scary personal stories, but nothing like spooky. So. All right. So my story starts in the halls of the Cecil Hotel, believed by some to be the deadliest hotel in America.
You must have watched the Cecil series on Investigative Discovery.
But this story
happened
just 8 short years ago. The Cecil Hotel, built in the 1920s, is located in downtown Los Angeles near the infamous Skid Row. Some people believe the hotel is haunted or perhaps possessed by demonic spirits. The seedy, low-budget hotel has been the site of numerous unsolved murders and multiple suicides. It also served as the home of serial killers Jack Unterweger and Richard the Night Stalker Ramirez, who were long-term residents. The hotel was so bad in the 80s. Another long-term resident, Kenneth Givens, claims the hotel averaged 1 to 3 911 calls a day. Former hotel manager Amy Price confirms this, saying that there were 80 deaths just during her time as manager. In one tragic event, a mind-boggling suicide in 1962, after a fight with her husband, Pauline Otten jumped from a 7th-story room and landed on an unlucky pedestrian on the sidewalk below, killing them both. Another patron in 1964, Pigeon Goldie Osgood, who gained her nickname because she frequently fed pigeons in nearby Pershing Square, was found raped, eaten, and stabbed in her room, and that case still remains unsolved. And then you may have heard of the mysterious Black Dahlia murder of Elizabeth Short, who was found brutally murdered, body severed and mutilated, just days after drinking at the bar of the Cecil Hotel. There have been so many mysterious deaths and occurrences that Cecil was the inspiration for the horror series American Horror Stories Hotel.
Ooh, yeah.
All right, so fast forward to 8 years ago. January 26, 2013, Canadian college student Alyssa Lam arrived in Los Angeles via Amtrak train from San Diego. Her next stop was to be Santa Cruz as part of her solo trip along the West Coast. The trip was a break from her studies at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver, Canada, also her hometown. And her family did not want her traveling alone, but she compromised with them and said that she'd check in with them every day with a call. Now, during her time in L.A., she stayed at the Cecil Hotel. But strangely, the day she was supposed to check out, January 31st, they didn't receive a call. Her family called the Los Angeles police, who searched the Cecil Hotel for her, but they could not find her. So the police decided to review the camera footage from the Cecil Hotel. This is where things got really eerie. They found Alyssa on video in the hotel elevator, but she was acting very strange. Now, Alyssa can be seen stepping into the elevator. She calmly pushes a bunch of buttons. She stands back, waiting for the doors to close. But it doesn't. Now, seemingly confused, she'll quickly lunge forward to look out of the doorway, peering to the right as if she's checking to see if someone or something is down the hall. She steps back into the elevator and slumps into the front corner as if she's hiding. The elevator still doesn't close. So she slowly leans her head out of the elevator door, peering again to the right, and then later to the left. Then she hops out of the elevator and does a weird two-step. She backs back into the elevator, and then she'll step completely into the hallway. She's off camera for a bit, standing in the hallway. And the elevator, strangely, still isn't closing. She steps back into the elevator again, pressing buttons, and nothing happened. And this is where it gets even stranger. She starts motioning as if she's talking to someone. Mm-hmm. Here she's pressing the buttons.
I'm tripped out about that elevator.
Still not closing. Elevator still not closing.
I'm just telling her, how about you get off and stay off?
That's what I would have done.
Yeah, where are the stairs?
All right, now she's talking in motion. It's like she's talking to someone who's not there, right next to her. But there's no one on the camera. At one point, it looks like she's pleading with someone, some invisible apparition. But still, no one else is captured on the video except Alyssa. Now, shortly after that, she goes completely off screen in the opposite direction to the left. And then about 30 seconds later, after nearly 4 minutes, no one else ever appears in the video. And the elevator door finally closes on its own. And Alyssa Lam disappears. That's not where it ends. Yes, during the time the police were investigating her disappearance, guests had been complaining about an odor and a foul taste from the water. After a few days, the water was coming out black. And then on February 19th, nearly 3 weeks after the disappearance, Alyssa Lam's dead body was found floating in one of the Cecil Hotel's water tanks on the roof. According to the fire department, the tank had to be drained completely, then cut open from the side, remove her body. Alyssa was wearing the same clothes from the surveillance video, and hotel staff said that she'd always been seen around the premises by herself. Now, some people hypothesize she was not talking to an apparition, but that she was talking to the actual murderer who was down the hall. But then that doesn't explain why they were never seen in the video. More importantly, the strange behavior of the elevator. Also, if you were thinking suicide, her parents said that she had no suicidal ideations. And a nearby bookstore owner recalled her purchasing books and music specifically to take home to her family. And she may have been suffering from mental illness, but others believe demonic forces preyed on her, leading her to the Cecil Hotel and ultimately her death. Her death was officially ruled an accidental drowning, but to this day, no one knows exactly how Alyssa's corpse ended up in the hotel's water tank, or if anyone or anything might have been responsible.
Ooh. Neo. So I just want to say, the reason why I responded the way I did to Neo was because this morning, there was a marathon on investigative discovery about the Cecil Hotel. I think I watched five episodes today. And one of them was about the Night Stalker, Richard Ramirez. And they said in the documentary that he used to walk the halls of the Cecil Hotel in his underwear, sometimes naked, blood covered in blood after he presumably killed someone. But no one called the police. No one reported it because that was not out of the ordinary for activity at the Cecil Hotel. Yes. Oh. That's how crazy this place was.
Why did they choose that place?
Yes.
Because it was cheap. Like when it opened in the 20s, it was kind of a lavish back then, what would have been considered a boutique hotel. But then, you know, as time progressed, and, you know, the Four Seasons and the Ritz and all of these other trendy hotels open, they never really upgraded the Cecil. And so you had a lot of drug dealers who lived there, a lot of prostitution that was there, a lot of other criminal activity. But like Neo said, a lot of killers lived there as well.
Murders.
Still there? Is that hotel still there?
It's been renamed.
Oh. They need to burn it.
I probably driven by it before. I don't know what it is. Don't want to go in. What's it been renamed?
You don't.
Just so that.
yes, so you can avoid it.
I'll find the name for you before we close out. But it was renamed, and I know it. I just don't remember it.
It's been renamed. Stay on Main.
Stay on Main.
Stay on Main. Yeah.
Okay, don't stay on Main.
There's no amount of
don't stay on Main. Especially you, Erica, you're in LA.
That's not an inviting name. That's not an inviting name at all.
I know.
My question to the panel is, what do you guys think?
No, thank you.
There's not enough sage out there to clean this place, man.
Oh, there's no. I would never touch it. They say that
what
after.
What do you guys think happened to her?
I don't know. They say that after the incident, bookings went up. Went way up.
Because people
dark always, tourism.
They want to
dark tourism is a thing.
I mean,
I can't say I probably wouldn't have stayed there. I may have taken a visit just so I could see that elevator up close and personal. That's interesting. I have my own theory about what was going on with her.
I think it was similar to what you were describing. I mean, I didn't want to make this part of the story, but she was supposedly suffering from some mental illness.
And that's what that's kind of what it looked like to me, that, you know, that it wasn't necessarily a ghost or any other type of presence there, because physically nothing came at her. Like, nothing forced her to move. Yeah. There was nothing, no movement.
Well, explain the elevator, though.
Yeah, why the elevator?
You said this was 8 years ago. How old is that hotel?
But why? As soon as she walks away, 30 seconds later, it closes on its own. Why?
But that's the thing. On the elevator, if she's mashed a bunch of buttons, I don't know, maybe it's a service thing. Maybe it doesn't respond to it, because if it's a hotel, you don't want those idiots mashing all the buttons. So that might be a failsafe to that, because she goes in and hammers them a couple of times. There's a reason why elevators get serviced on a regular basis. They are pieces of electronics.
But how would she end up in a water tank? Like, isn't there
if she went
you
there,
have to unscrew stuff?
Yeah, she had that to get, she had to climb on top of that water tank. Like, there's a hatch at the top. So you would have
to, she'd have, she'd have to first know it was there.
On top and get in.
She'd have to first know it was there to want to go in. Then she'd have to jump in and then figure out how to get into it and then jump in herself.
If she's in, if she's engaged in some type of psychosis, some type of psychotic breakdown, it's possible that she did do that. Like, honestly,
how would she know all those details?
She probably wouldn't, but you just go up there. I'm going to go up to the roof and see what I can find. If someone has,
how does she know how to get to the roof? How does she know to get on top of there? And how does she know to jump in?
Do you know how many roofs I've been on?
No, I really don't. How are you? I don't know what you're doing.
I'm a very curious person. I'm always in places that I should not be. And it's not because, you know, I'm doing the do. It's because I'm curious. You know, I'm nosy. I'm a reporter. I'm a journalist. And sometimes people go places that they don't need to be. And unfortunately, the unthinkable happens. I think if you had had a camera on me when I was in the room thinking my mama was behind me with a knife, it probably would have looked a lot similar to this. It probably would have looked a lot, because,
and I could still argue that you it may not have been psychosis. Sometimes I believe people can see into a different realm of reality.
I mean, but listen, I didn't need to see into a different realm. I knew my mom was evil.
Fair enough.
No grappling. But I do think on that night it was me. I think I had worked myself up into such a mental frenzy that it was me that night.
I was just going to say, with the elevator, I think it's pretty clear she was trying to get the door to close, and whatever button she was pushing wasn't working, so she was just hitting all the other buttons to try to get the door to close. That's what I would do if I, because you just couldn't get the thing to, right? So she was panicked about whatever she was doing.
I don't know. The elevator is the key to me to be, there's something a little strange going on here.
Yeah. I'm also curious as why her first instinct wasn't to run versus to stand there and talk to it. Like, I'm not talking to the ghost, you know? But like I said, in my situation, I didn't run because it was right behind me. But the door was right there open for her. And she was in the hallway. So I'm just like, girl, run. Run.
All right, we're over on time. Let's try to get Gianni last story in.
Come on, Gianni, what you got for us?
Okay, so my story is a little bit different. I got my story from Reddit. So Reddit is full of everyday people telling like real life stories. And one in particular caught my attention and I wanted to share it with you guys. So a Reddit user writes, "My neighbor is one of those annoying wannabe YouTube personalities. Over the years, I've seen him cough up cinnamon, lay flat on the hood of his car as he slowly creeps down his driveway, and douse himself in lukewarm water, all the while screaming, 'Epic win! Epic fail!' It can get tiring to watch him go about his shenanigans in the pursuit of viral fame. So when he knocked on my door the other day and told me he was going away for a few weeks and asked that I get his mail, honestly, it was a relief. I can't explain the peace of mind I had knowing I didn't have to brace myself for any of the stupidity for a while. So things were normal for the first couple of days. He received a few bills, a bit of spam, and what I could only assume was a birthday card. Then, one evening, I got home to find a cardboard box waiting on his front porch. In big red letters was written, 'Return to sender.' I'm no small fry, but I admit I had trouble lifting the box on my own. It was really freaking heavy. Lugging it across the road to my house was even harder. And I quickly realized there was no way I was going to drag it up the stairs and through my front door. So I decided I'd leave this package in my garage. In hindsight, I should have set the package down while I struggled to open the tricky, door to the garage. But you know how it is when you've got a good grip on something. There's no point in setting it down if you don't have to. It was as I kicked the door for a third time that I lost my grip on the package and it fell to the ground. I heard a light crack inside. Shit, I cursed. I hope I hadn't broken anything important, but I figured I just wouldn't tell my neighbor about it and let him assume the break happened en route. Hands-free, I finally managed to get the garage door unstuck, and boy, did it screech in protest as it rolled up and over me. I dragged the box the rest of the way, setting it in the corner for whenever my neighbor would come back to claim it. Then I forgot all about it, until a few days passed, that is. I'm not sure exactly how long it took for the smell to waft in from the crack under the garage to the house door, but it came in a slow progression. It was a sickly sweet odor similar to a skunk, and for the first few days after I smelled it, I genuinely assumed that's exactly what it was, roadkill that had left its mark on my house. It was only when I realized the scent was growing more intense instead of fading that I was looking for a source. That's when I opened the garage door, and that's when the odor knocked me back. Holding my nose, I had to identify the culprit. The only change in the garage was the box in the corner. I remember thinking it must have been one of those meat of the month subscription boxes. The meat must have gone rancid from being left out of the fridge for so long. How much meat could have been in there for the box to have been so large and heavy? I covered my nose as I approached the box, a pair of scissors in my hands. I probably wouldn't have needed them to open it as it had become so soggy enough at the bottom. To poke through with a finger, but I wasn't about to poke my finger into spoiled meat juices. My scissors tore through the tape along the top of the cardboard box. I felt the smell couldn't get any worse, but as I flipped the flaps open, I discovered a whole gamut of stink. I was met with waves of piss, sweat, and putrefaction. It was so bad that I staggered back and, not ashamed to admit, that I ran out the door for a breath of fresh air. When I returned to the garage, the flaps of the box were still open. I was prepared with a clothespin pinning my nostrils shut, a garbage bag in one hand, and the strongest cleaner I could find in the other. But as it turns out, I didn't need any of those things. I wouldn't have to touch or clean the contents of that box. I would only have to suffer the nightmares every night. You see, there was meat in that box, but it didn't come from a cow or a pig. No, it was worse than that. It was my neighbor. Dead, still in one piece, but dead. I called the cops, and naturally they took me in for interrogation. Thankfully, they soon realized I wasn't involved. They showed me the footage only once, and my neighbor was sitting in the box outside of a shipping facility, laughing as he told the world how he was going to mail himself across state lines. His friend closed the lid and presumably dropped him off for shipment. Throughout the next couple of hours or days, my neighbor recorded a few short clips about his progress, and then on the last entry, the box toppled over, he broke his neck, and that was it. Yet there's one thing I didn't tell the police after they showed the video. One thing I heard in the footage that will haunt me to the day I die. Just after the topple that broke his neck, I heard the familiar screeching sound from my garage door.
Wow. That's just a dumbass. Why would he do that?
I mean...
Some people kind of, you know, I said nobody really deserves bad, but some people
earn
it.
You get what you get. Sometimes you get
that reminds
what you
me
get.
Of those
some people earn it.
Play stupid games.
Yeah. Win stupid prizes.
All right.
I'm gonna mail myself.
Good job, Gianni. All right, so that is Gianni. All for good story one, time. This was fun, guys. I really enjoyed it. This was a lot of fun. So, Erica, I just want to give you a chance to kind of just give any shout outs, share any final thoughts, or anything that you'd like to say.
Thank you for having me. This has been so fun. I love Halloween. I hope everybody has a great Halloween. Since it is Sunday, I guess none of us get to have too great a Halloween, but a little bit of fun, you know?
And make sure you pick up her book. The link is in the description. So grab her book. You have to check it out. All right. Thank you again, Erica, so much for joining us from LA.
Thank you.
Really appreciate you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. All right.
Thank you, Erica.
And we'd love to have you back again.
Cruella got a new look, y'all. Cruella got a new look.
All right. Have a great time with your daughter.
Thank you.
All right.
Wait, Erica. I wanted to ask Erica what her daughter was for Halloween.
Oh, my bad. You waited too long. All right.
Heck, well, you know, we had a wardrobe malfunction over here.
You know what? I was going to ask Liz, how did you get your hair under the wig? And then I saw your hair was blow-dried.
Yeah, so it's well, not blow-dried, but like pulled back into a bun. So it's a big old huge bun at the bottom. And then I have a scarf on. So what you saw was like my scarf, but it's blow-dried underneath. There's still a big hump, like right here. There's a big old knot.
Look at you, Rob.
With all of that.
Not visible.
I'm just grooving to the music.
I like this better. I like this better.
All right. Well, we're over time, so we'll probably skip the after show today. But we'll go ahead and continue. Let's do our game show.
Yes.
What are we doing?
Halloween trivia. All right. Today's game is Halloween trivia. Go around the horn. I'll just ask you each a question, and we'll see if you get it right. All right. Let's start off with Gianni Storm first. I'm going to start with Gianni Storm on this one. You ready, Gianni?
Yes.
All right. The origins of Halloween can be traced back to what Celtic festival believed to be the one day a year that the dead return to earth and roam among the living. Is it Samhain, Beltane, or Agamani?
What the heck? Beltane?
Oh.
No.
That is
good Samhain to you, my friend. Good Samhain to you.
Due to its origins on the ancient Celtic festival of Samhain, Halloween is said to be more Irish than St. Patrick's Day. Wow, I didn't know that. Huh. All right.
Well, I mean, because most people in Ireland don't celebrate St. Patrick's Day, first of all, first and foremost. That's us Americans, but another conversation.
Okay. This is for Robbie. One of the most time-honored ways to celebrate Halloween, the wearing of costumes, can be traced back to ancient Celts. What was the original purpose behind donning a costume and mask? To protect themselves from evil spirits, to disguise themselves from their neighbors, or to frighten their naughty children?
I'm going to go spiritual and say to protect themselves from evil spirits.
All right, protect themselves. I lost my makeup, trying to fix my makeup.
See, we're all breaking down.
I know.
No, I was itching. I didn't realize it. You are correct, Robbie, to protect themselves from evil spirits. All right. Lizzie. All right. Once Christianity becomes the dominant religion in the British Isles, Celtic traditions were melded with Christian observances. The name Halloween is derived from this Christian holiday, the evening before All Saints Day. Would that be All Holy Evenfall?
Happy All Hallows Eve, everyone.
Yes. That is correct. Correct. All right, Gianni, got to catch up. Modern day trick-or-treating, when children dress in costumes and go door-to-door collecting candy, has its roots in this medieval tradition. Is it souling, the practice of begging for food or money in exchange for saying prayers on behalf of the dead? Spiriting, the practice of dressing up like a ghost and playing tricks on your neighbors? Or feasting, the practice of sharing food with strangers at the end of the harvest period?
That seems like a trick question. I don't know. I'm going to say...
Think olden time, you know.
Okay, souling or spiriting. Modern day. A medieval tradition. So like Vikings? That's medieval?
I'm going to go with souling. Vikings is far before medieval.
Different place, man. Different place.
I'm going to go with souling.
You said souling. Souling. Let's check it out. bowling.
Right.
That is correct. Oh. The practice of begging for food or money in exchange for saying prayers on behalf of the dead. Correct. All right.
This is Rob B.
Trick-or-treating was brought to America by the Irish, where it became popular in the early 20th century. However, it experienced a temporary decline during World War II. During what effect on the war? Was that fuel rationing, cotton rationing, or sugar rationing?
Sugar rationing.
Sugar rationing. Let's check it out.
Makes sense.
That is correct. Right. Correct. All right.
That's the year all the kids got dried apples and raisins.
That's so evil.
All right. I was just winning. Lizzie, this is to stay with Rob B. Halloween is the second largest commercial holiday in the U.S., with consumers buying decorations, costumes, and candy for trick-or-treaters. How much Americans spend each year around Halloween?
I think this is like a trick question because it's not taken into consideration pandemic.
Would that be $3 billion, $6 billion, or $1 billion?
I'm gonna go with three.
$3 billion.
$3 billion.
That is incorrect. Yeah. Incorrect. It is $6 billion.
My man's birthday brings in $6 billion a year.
All right.
$6 billion. That makes for a lot of obese children.
That's a lot.
All right.
Only in the U.S. It's costumes, too.
All right. This is the chance to catch up to Rob B and force a tie.
This is right up your alley, Rob B.
This is for Gianni. One explanation for the carving of pumpkins into jack-o'-lanterns comes from a Celtic folktale about a man named Stingy Jack, who played tricks on the devil. When he died, he wasn't allowed into heaven or hell. The devil doomed him to roam the earth with only a burning coal to light his way. Ever canny, Jack carved a lantern for his coal. However, he didn't use a pumpkin, but rather a cabbage, potato, or turnip. I think I know the answer.
Ever canny, Jack carved a lantern for his coal.
There's that cabbage again, Rob B. There's that cabbage down again, Rob.
Cabbage.
Cabbage is evil.
Oh, wait, don't listen to her. Don't listen to her. Is he trying to trick you? Don't let her psych you out.
Lizzie is going through metamorphosis over here. I think this one looks better.
It does look nice.
Yeah.
That's hard. I'm going to say a cabbage. It's
cabbage? You're going with cabbage. You're going with Lizzie's cabbage. Okay.
No, that was not my suggestion.
Incorrect. Incorrect.
That was not my suggestion. I was talking about Cabbage Town.
The answer is a turnip. Pumpkins, of course, weren't available in the old world. They came into use when Irish immigrants in America found them bigger and easier to carve than turnip.
Turnips are gross.
They are gross. All right. Robbie, this could be for the win. Instead of Halloween in Latin America, it is more common to celebrate Dia de Muertos.
Yeah, what is?
Particularly in Mexico. Time to honor dearly departed loved ones with food, gifts, processions, and prayers. The festivities are symbolized by, would it be skulls, black cats, or spiders?
Look at Rob.
I'm thinking skulls.
Skulls. Let's see, Robbie.
It's Dia.
Of course it's skulls.
Yes, it's skulls. Correct. Representation of skulls and skeletons are abundant during this three-day holiday, from elaborate skull-like face paintings to sugar skull treats, which are given.
Representation matters. Representation matters.
Both the living and the dead.
It's missing an article. It's Dia de los Muertos.
Dia de los Muertos.
All right, I'm going to give you one more, Lizzie. Robbie wins, but I'm going to give you one more. In China, you might celebrate Yulan, the Festival of Hungry Ghosts. Festivities entail? Would that be lighting incense?
They hangry.
Burning artificial money, offering food to the dead. Or would it be acting out the dramatic deaths of famous spiritual leaders, or spending the night in the cemetery to feast, chant, prayer?
Is it in China?
I'm going to say three. I hope it's not two.
Spending the night in the cemetery. Okay, that's funny, actually. Two is funny. All right. That is incorrect. It's lighting incense, burning official money, and offering to the dead. All right, Robbie, good job. You win again. He's on a roll, right? I mean, you are on a roll with the...
All right. On a roll. He didn't win last week.
That's right. He did not win last week. I think he's got three out of the last four, though. But all right.
You know why?
All right. Let's get some shots. All right. Any shout outs? Johnny Storm.
Shout out to Good Stuff Juices, making the world a better place with their organic, cold pressed, flavorful juice made every morning in the juice factory. Try out their new fall juices selection. Delivery is nationwide at goodstuffjuices.com.
Awesome. Robbie?
A shout out to Annie, Isla, and RJ. Have a happy Halloween, girls. And to all the adults out there who enjoy Halloween, thank you for joining us. You're in good company.
All right, Lizzie.
Shout out to all of the Halloween haters out there. We don't like you. We don't support you. And we still doing our shit. Whoop, whoop. Michael Myers says hello, everyone. Happy birthday to my dad. Happy birthday, Quinn McKittrick. Whoop, 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 whoop.
All right. My shout out goes to my lovely wife who put up with me putting this costume together. You know, I get a little impatient. So I run
out. My ponytail.
Yeah, she worked this. She did the ponytail. Yep, that's her doing right there.
Is she going to grab it?
Snatch that off your head.
So shout out to my lovely wife. Appreciate all your help because you definitely put up with me. All right. And the final shout out goes to the winner of our pet shenanigans of the week. Nesmi Dolores' tiny little puppy winking with the caption, "I'm a good boy," and then parentheses,
"That means he's bad,"
pretending to be a good boy.
That means he's bad as shit. Hi, boo boo.
I really am a good boy.
All right, to see photos of all the pets or to post your favorite pet's photo or video, make sure you go to TLS Pet Shenanigans Facebook group. Also, mypetshenanigans.com. The photo with the most likes and comments gets a TLS shout out each and every week. And that is officially all the time we have for today's show.
Take us home, Robbie. Take us home.
I'd like to thank all of you guys for joining us. We hope that maybe you learned something, gained a new perspective, and got some things off your chest. And of course, that you had a spooky good time. We'll be back live streaming next Sunday, November 7th, 4 p.m. Don't forget, the audio version of the podcast is available every Monday after 6. And the party will not be continuing today since we ran over time. But our final thought for the day goes to Robbie. Robbie, close us out.
So this is just a reminder to everybody out there. If you are going out this evening, if you are driving at all, please make sure you've got your lights on, your fog lights on, and be slow. Be aware that kids are just hopped up on sugar and not paying attention. They're going to be running across the street. So just be on the lookout for them. And kids, now be on the lookout for the car.
All right. Thank you, Robbie. All right. Thank you, Lizzie, Gianni, Robbie, our people behind the scenes, always working hard to bring you an awesome show. Gianni, Ellen, Nesmi, Jose, Olivia, E. But most importantly, thank you for watching and listening to Shenanigans every week. We hope you have a wonderful, wonderful Halloween.
I gotta wear these wigs, y'all.
Have a wonderful Halloween.
I'm not used to this.
All right, guys.